Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Why Move to HAL-DB conference call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Sally Tuscany. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Audra. Appreciate the introduction. Good day, and thank you all very much for joining us. We're delighted to have such a large crowd here today to learn more about moving to IMS HAL-DB. IMS Software Group continues to grow, and believe it or not, IMS and IMS database tools are one of our fastest-growing businesses. I know all of you are very aware of IMS and the commitment IBM has made to the IMS database in the enhancements we've made in version 9 and version 10, and we are clearly here to stay and will continue to provide the technology you need going forward to run your business. Again, thank you very much for your time, and I'd like to turn the call over to Rick Long from our IMS database level 2 service team. Okay, Rick.
Well, good morning, everybody, or afternoon, wherever you are. Like I say, my name is Rick Long. I work in the database service team. My background is I've worked with IMS since 1974, I think it was, as application programmer. I then moved on and spent about 20 years as a database design consultant with IBM and in the internal IBM environments. I designed databases, worked with databases for lots and lots of years. And recently I've joined into the IMS Development Lab and work in Level 2 service for database. So when you have problems with databases and PMRs and stuff, I often get to look at them. What we're going to talk about today is about HAL-DB. And we're going to talk about HAL-DB and why people are moving to it and why we think people will continue to move into the HAL-DB structure. Just to clarify for technically correctness, the type of database is full-function HAL-DB. And we have the other types of databases we have are full-function non-HAL-DB and, of course, the fast databases. So when you hear the term HAL-DB, it is, in fact, a full-function database. So it has all the functions of full-function databases, as we have known and used for a number of years. The term HAL-DB is simply meant to talk about the new structures we put in place in version 7 of IMS in order to allow us to grow the business. So as we begin, this is being recorded and we'll take questions at the end of the conference. So if you have any questions as I go through, please write them down or make a note for yourself, and I will try to answer them as best I can at the end of the presentation. So I'm going to let you know as I move through my screen, so I'll try to indicate what screen I'm on. So I'm actually on the introductory screen, and I'm going to go to the first screen now. And it's the screen that talks about why we want to move to HAL-DB. Well, there are three reasons why we want to move to HAL-DB. First off, it's a high availability. HAL-DB provides high availability in the fact that we now have partition independence. That means you can have databases partitioned by keys or by a selection exit, and you can have some or all of those partitions available at any point in time. So that if you choose to partition along the lines of, say, time zones or any other kinds of things like that, you could have those partitions available at certain times of the day, have those partitions not available at other times of the day, and still leave the rest of the database available. The other thing we'll talk about as we go through this, we'll talk about large databases. We have, of course, removed the restrictions on size. The original size for a full-function database was if you had a single data set with 4 gigabytes in VSAM and 8 gigabytes in OSAM. Of course, you always had the option of having data set groups, and you could have 10 data set groups. So now with HAL-DBs, we have removed those restrictions in terms of the 4 and 8 gigabytes being the largest database size you could have. We still have the size limit per data set, and we still have the option to have data set groups, and we'll talk about that as we go through. The last thing we'll talk about in a little bit of detail at the end is talking about how you can change the design of your databases to make use of the HAL-DB function. So by slight changes or changes in how you look at the databases, you can build applications that make use of the ability in HAL-DB for partition independence, and we'll look at that as we go along. So I'm going to slide to the next thing, and the next one, of course, is we're going to start talking about high availability through partition independence. What we mean by partition independence is that each partition of the database, whether it be key ranged or divided by a partition selection exit, each partition is opened and authorized by IMS and DBRC independently of each other. They are not opened all at the same time, they're opened when they are needed. So, I'm going to go on to the next page and show you a picture of what it might look like. So DBRC has complete independence of authorizing databases. For example, if you had a database that you choose to break up by, let's say, U.S. states as the key range that you want to use, all the data for particular U.S. states were put into partitions, either one partition or more than one partition if some of the states are bigger than others. You have the ability to then, by showing this, that you can have these divided up, and then you could make those partitions available or unavailable at a partition level. For example, if you had state holidays, and in the eastern states had a holiday that were not being the same date as in the west, then you might take those partitions offline and do your reorganization functions or backup functions when they're not needed because of the holiday in those states. And then the other states would be unaffected by the unavailability of those partitions. An idea might be by time zone. I worked in an application where we covered, our application had to cover several countries, Australia, New Zealand, and some of the Asian countries that we had to cover. Well, we used to have the data stored in those databases, and we used to have different databases for those New Zealand or Australian or Indian or Indonesian databases. And it made it very difficult because our batch window kept getting shorter and shorter on us because of the time zone changes. We had to live with the databases being online for long periods of time. So when we went to a place where we could go to partitioning, we could be able to partition those off and make those partitions available early for those applications, those countries farther east than those west. And we were able to maneuver the availability around by simply making those partitions available or unavailable at the appropriate time. The picture I showed you here is just showing you a picture of key ranges. It could be done by key ranges and just giving you a sample of what partition names look like. In some cases, in this case, I've tried to make it with the payroll database, and I tried to use the 2K American state abbreviation for part of the partition name, and then a number in order to indicate number. And states like California, where would be much larger in data than some of the smaller states in terms of population, then you might have more than multiple partitions for those particular states. And again, DBRC, as you work through those, if you would do a get next call from the beginning of the database to the end of the database, DBRC would actually authorize those databases as it needs them. Going on to the next screen, we're going to talk about backup processing. Now, backup processing, in this environment, again, you have the ability to have your backup processing concurrent. Again, if you take the entire database offline, you can now, instead of having to do a single backup of the data set and having to do it in one step or one job, you could now reduce the elapsed time for those particular processes to occur by running concurrent backups. Because each partition is independent in terms of DBRC and IMS is independent, that image copy job can run and they can go on and concurrently. Now, each partition is also going to be limited, if it's a single data set, to 4 gigabytes. So the length of each of those jobs would be relatively small. If you had a database that was originally only 4 gigabytes in length and you partitioned it, you might have 4 1-gigabyte partitions. And again, the image copy of those 1 gigabyte partitions can occur concurrently. So you could shorten down the length of time to take it to do a backup by simply running those concurrently. Now, DBRC keeps track of all of those data sets. Recovery options are completely independent. Again, you can recover those data sets independently, the partitions independently. So you have the complete independence of those being done that way, and yet you can still force the recovery of the whole thing if you choose to recover the whole HALDB, then of course you have those options as well. So again, this is the picture of showing that you can improve availability by reducing your batch window by not the backup not taking as long. Because I'm going on to the next screen now, because backup processing and the partitions are independent, you may want to have different timings of the backups. You may only have to back up active partitions. If you have data, historical data, and you know that you keep it available for your application, but you know that certain ranges of that data, you know, in much of the case is not being updated, then there is no need to long continue to take backups of the data that is not changing. So if you are aware of the fact that, say, that if you're, in the example I've shown here where you have the database maybe in a month where you're storing your monthly data, stuff that's going into database this month, well, if you know that the data is not updated after a few months, then there's no reason to continue to do the backup processing for those partitions because the data is, the backup copy you have is current. You don't need to change it. You don't need to take it again. You don't need to take it offline to do that processing. So then you could, in fact, do backups for only those partitions for which you know that you need to continue, you have continued to do updates for. And again, it just goes along the process of avoiding to have to take an outage of a partition simply to take a backup of it. So again, in this case, we're trying to say that we're trying to improve the availability of your application by allowing you to choose that which you need to back up and make sure that you're taking your partitions offline only for the shortest amount of time that you have to have them offline to do such processing as backup processing. And again, you can still, the recoverability of the system is still the same, so you can still choose to recover those databases because as long as it's a valid backup, it doesn't matter when it was taken, we will still be able to recover it. So that sort of helps give you an idea of shortening down the backup, the window from the window we're having to take databases offline to do backup processing, and hoping to improve our availability as we do that. It is also true, as we go on to the next slide, talking about reorganization processing. There are two reasons we take databases offline from our application environment. One is to do backups so that we obviously have recoverable environments. But the other process is for reorganization. Now, as I go on to the next slide, it shows you a picture again of our database for the thing. Because partitions are independent, from an IMS point of view, the reorgs are independent. You can reorganize individual partitions and not have to deal with the entire database. If you want to do the entire database, each partition or groups of partitions, however you'd like to group it, can be grouped together and be run in parallel. So that if you have, let's say you had six partitions and you wanted to run it in three processes, you could have a reorganization process running concurrently for two partitions at a time. Each process would have two partitions being unloaded and reloaded at the same time. So that, again, helps us to decrease the amount of time we need available for us in order to do reorganization processing. The other thing about reorganization processing is that with HALDB, is that, again, we don't need to reorganize data that has not been updated or changed. The reason we do reorganization process is typically that we're doing insert activity into the database and we're causing the database records, which consists of a root segment of all of its children to be split across multiple parts of the database, and therefore its access to retrieve the data is slower because it has to go out and find the data and retrieve it from the various places that actually got physically stored. That was inserted. The reorganization process puts all that data back together again into a contiguous bit of storage and bit of place so that it's faster to retrieve. So with reorganization processing, that's what we're trying to do again, is simply to increase the speed of the access to data that is being updated, that is being inserted into. If certain partitions are less active than other partitions, the processes that you need to do for those partitions, you could reorg them much less often. Those processes or those partitions which we know are very, very active in terms of insert and delete activity or update activity, we could reorganize those partitions more often. And again, the less we have to do offline, the more availability to our application. So, just trying to show here that because I'm trying to change a mindset in terms of a HALDB. When we move into a HALDB, we no longer have to think of the database as a huge one data set thing that we have to reorganize or back up as an entirety. We now have the options to say, let's look at the data. Let's look at what we do and what processes we're running against the data and how active are those partitions. If it was not necessarily state data, but historical data, databases that particularly that have the root key always increasing, things like invoice numbers, account payable numbers, payroll things that are date orientated, you tend to be working in the current month or the current part of the database. Those keys are always increasing in value, then you're working on the end of the database. You're always inserting and all your activities at the end of the database. The beginning of the database or the other partitions would not be have much activity. So if we have that kind of situation, there is no need to do the reorganization of that data. We're simply wasting time to unload and reload it, putting back together a database that's already organized in the best way possible. So HALDB allows us to say, no, let's not do that. Let's look at the partitions, look at the activity of those partitions. We know that they're active, then we will do reorganize those partitions independently. That will make the reorganization process much, much faster. The other thing about reorganization processing for HALDBs, which is different than its full-function non-HALDB partners, is that if you have secondary indexes or logical relationships, then the reorganization process offline took a lot more work. We had to unload all of the databases that were related, or unload the one database and scan the other. Then once we had actually completed the reload, we had to run some other utilities that did prefix resolution, prefix update, which tended to take longer in time than the actual unload and reload of the databases did. And once those were done, then we could bring the database back online. HALDB allows us to run reorganizations for our partition completely independent of all its secondary indexes, completely independent of all of its logical relationships. That means you can only have to unload and reload. The only two steps you have to do is unload, reload. You can do it by a partition completely independent of everything else. And IMS will handle the differences. IMS will make sure that you can still access the data properly. So I'm going to go on to the next slide, which shows you again just a picture. We're now still at reorganization processing and still a batch reorganization process that you could do databases at one end or either end of of the reorganization process. And independent of each other. And again, those can be done when those particular databases are not being used during a process. So again, if it's different time zones, you could do those different days. Which also makes it mean that you could do your organization processing, say you could do four or five partitions every week instead of having to do all of them every week. You could split it up and do it at different times and, again, reduce the amount of time you have to take your application offline. Another way in which we have brought high availability for HALDBs is our in version 9, we introduced online reorg. Online reorg is a way for us to move the data around and put it back together physically so that it functions and is accessed quicker. That process with OLR now is a completely online process, completely capable to be running while there is application workload also running for your IMS system. I'm just showing you a picture here of an IMS system and the fact that the DLISAS region, in a sense, will be doing accessing and moving the data from one partition to another data set for that partition. And we use what's called a cursor. That means we start reading through the A data set, as we call it, the first database, the data set. We read a block of data. We will lock that block of data and move it to the M data set or to the next active data set. Once those database records have been moved, we will unlock them. So they are only unavailable for the length of the lock. Now, OLR is like the best BMP, best behaved BMP you've ever seen. We will never lock longer than a second. We will move as much data as we can in that thing, and then we will try to enforce the rules that we'll lock it only for no longer than a second. So we'll take data from one partition, lock it, move it, put it in the other data set. It will become immediately available to your application. Now we do that with a cursor, so as we process through the online reorg for a partition, we have a cursor with the key range or the high value that we have moved. If you access the application data, it comes in and accesses that key, and the key is below the cursor, then we know that key has already been moved to the other data set, and we'll go access it from the other data set. If the key value is above the cursor, we know we have not yet moved it, so therefore it's still in the old data set, and we'll go find it there. If the key range you're looking for happens to be on the cursor, that means it's locked. You will simply wait for the second that it takes us to move the data from one partition to one data set to the other, and then you'll access the data as if it was there. There is no impact to the application to have to worry about secondary logicals. We will update that and make sure that any access to the secondary index of the logical relationships will also be available to us. And we use what there is called our self-healing pointers, so we know where the data is moved to, and so we will make sure that all the other pointers pointing to it will eventually get healed and pointed to the correct thing. So in the online environment, you no longer need to take the database offline to do reorganization processing. So, a couple of things about OLR. It's a whole discussion on OLR and how you can do that. But you certainly wouldn't necessarily want to be running OLR during your peak prime activity in a database, but certainly in your off periods when you have your activity is not at peak volume, that you can certainly run OLRs alongside of currently running application processes. We, depending upon how much data you have in a partition, depends on how long the OLR will run. An OLR, again, is partition level. Therefore, if you have no data set groups, the biggest partition that can be is 4 gigabytes. So it doesn't take us all that long to move 4 gigabytes. It is not like you're talking about the 2 or 3 hour process you think about of a reorg, but probably 15, 20 minutes or 10 minutes, depending upon your activity and your DASI subsystem. But an OLR for a particular partition is relatively quick. And we reckon you can run multiple OLRs at a time, someplace in the order of four or five OLRs partitions running concurrently. Certainly, if you run any more than that, you might begin to impact your online system in terms of logging and stuff. And there are other things to think about with OLR, but the point of OLR is the fact that you can do the reorganization process. That means putting the database physically back together so it performs at its peak, and do that while you have not have to take any kind of an outage. There is no... I know that there are some forms of online reorganizations where we take a shadow, people take a shadow copy and at some point take a few second outage where they rename data sets and do things like that. The OLR that comes in on this version 9 and version 10 is completely independent of all of that, and there is no outage at all in terms of application availability for OLR. So again, we're HALDB, we're trying to make sure that the databases are available for application processing, and you only have to take them offline when you really need to. Things like backups, things where you need to have a complete set, or if you have to have, for application reasons, to have consistency across databases to have your backups consistent, then you may want to think about taking batch backup, batch image copies. But for all the other processes, especially the reorganization processing, online reorganization should be a viable option for people. So that covers high availability to partition independence. The other thing we are trying to, we have tried to accomplish with HALDB was to increase your application processing, to leave your application online as long as possible. So this Netflix section is talking about partition independence through application processing. Now, the design goal for OLR, sorry, design goal for HALDB that was that application processes would not have to understand partitioning. The application process should not need to make any application changes in order to handle a database that has moved from full function non-HALDB to full function HALDB. The one, because we made that design goal, the problem was going to be those applications that when they processing through the database, they wanted to have the same thing happen if the database was full function or HALDB. Well, obviously with HALDB, there's a possibility that you might be processing through a database and eventually reach a partition which is not available to the application, which would never have occurred in a non-HALDB environment, because obviously the first call would find the database unavailable and the application would terminate at the beginning. Now it is possible the application would have terminated someplace in the middle because it finally reached one of the partitions which happened to be unavailable. So what we did, most applications already had the init group status call coded, or some of them did anyway. The init group status call was a way for the application to determine in a nice way as to whether or not the database was available before it even started. So it would issue an init group status call and get a response back in status code. If it would get the NA status code, the database was not available, and the application could terminate with a method saying that this application or database is not currently available. Now, in HALDB, that still exists, that call still functions the same way. The only difference for HALDB is that when you get the NA status code, that means the master database was not available. That means that none of the partitions were available. So, in order for applications to make use of the fact that they were going to be able to cope with a partition or some partition being unavailable to the application, they needed to code the status call. And if they did code this init status call, they got a different status code back when they were moving through the partitions, and one of the partitions, it was not available to it, it would get a BA status code. Originally, the application would get a 3303 event. The database is not available. Now, the application gets a BA status call back, And it can choose then to continue or not continue. If the application needs to have all of the data available to it, then it may have to decide that when it gets to be a status code, that the application can no longer continue. If you were doing some kind of audit process and you had to read every partition, every invoice number, and you were looking through that, that process had to have exactly every bit of data available to it. It could not live with the fact that some data might not be available. Then you could terminate the program nicely and say that the application cannot continue because the partition is unavailable. However, if the application is allowed to know that there is, okay, there's some application data I can't get to, I will continue to process and process what data I have available to it. After the BA status code, a get next call would then get the next available partition. So the application program could now jump over those partitions which are unavailable. For example, in the picture I've shown here, that the California partitions were offline. A get next process down to the database would get a BA status code at the first access into the partition that contains the California data, which is the case with partition 51. The next get next call after that BA status code would retrieve the partition after the California. It would find out, would work out the fact that partition 51 and 55 were not available, and the next get next call would retrieve the next available partition it could find. If there were no available partition after California, then it would get the GB status code end of database. But if it found any partitions available after that partition in sequence, then it would get that first record with a blank blank status code. Now, key range, PALDB partitions, they would get, of course, it's by key range, we would get the next available key. If it's a partition selection exit being used to partition the data in the database, then we would call the partition selection exit, get the next available partition, and determine if it was available. And if it was, return the data from that, the first segment from that partition. So, that again helps increase our application processing, because if the application, particular process that's going on, doesn't need to have access to all of the data, it can live with the fact that there are some accesses, some data that won't be available to it, then you can now leave the application online while you take certain databases, certain partitions offline, certain parts of data offline to do whatever process you need to do. And I've just, on the next slide, I've just shown you what that init status group call looks like in PL1 code. So it was just easier to write it in PL1 to put it on a single screen, but that's what the init status group call looks like. If you code that call in your program, then when you do a get next call, if you reach an unavailable partition, you will get a BA status code returned to the application program. If you have not issued an init status group call and you reach an unavailable partition, you will get a 3303 event, data partition unavailable, and that's what you decided you needed to do. Therefore, it will end with an ABAP condition. Another way we've increased application processing with HALDB, well, because we've partitioned data, you have programs that go from the get next process, because at the beginning of the database, and normally process the entire database and gets a GB status code at the end that says end of database. I've processed the entire thing. Well, in a HALDB environment, you may say, well, what if I wanted to only process one of those partitions or a couple of those partitions? Let's say I wanted to process the New Mexico partition, and I wanted to grab all the information from the New Mexico partition. Well, we have provided a DFS HALDB DD card. Now, and that's a DD card that you can put into any application program, a DLI batch or BMP in particular. Online transactions, of course, you wouldn't be able to use this for. But for any batch process, online, BMP, or straight batch, if you code the DFS HALDB DD card, and in that thing you code a partition name, then we will process a get-next call. The first get-next call will get the first segment available in that partition, and you will get a GB status code when you reach the end of the partition. So the program, which used to read the entire database to grab the statistics or do whatever it was supposed to do, can now process against a single partition. So therefore, it would get the same results as if it had read the entire thing, but only in a subset of the data. Maybe it was simply to unload certain data. Maybe you wanted to copy some data to test. Maybe it was you wanted to pull some figures out of the database for those things. Anyway, so that's what that processing is for. So you have the ability then to process, without changing your application program, a single partition of the HALDB. Actually, in version 9, we eventually realized that there might be a need to process multiple consecutive partitions in a process like that. So with a certain APRPK 04880, we now allow you to give it a consecutive number of partitions. You could give us the first partition and the number of partitions that you wanted to process. So if you were processing, like in my example, the California partition, which happens to have two partitions, you could give it the first partition and you say you wanted to process two of them, it would then process the next E-range partition. Therefore, you would get all the California data in a single process. And again, this is done without changes to your application program. So the application program has no idea that it's reading a partition or an entire database. That is virtually true of all processing in HALDB. From an application program point of view, we do not return any kind of status code when we cross boundaries of partitions. The only status code you can get back when you cross the partition boundary would be the BA status code, saying that you have reached a partition. You don't know which, we don't tell you which partition, but a partition which is currently unavailable to you. And you have to then make a choice from the application's program point of view whether it chooses to continue or not continue. So we've tried to increase the processing here by giving the ability to process multiple partitions without changing application programs. Going on to the next slide. Of course, you have secondary index processing. Typically, secondary indexes are processes where you go into the data via entirely different key sequence. Employee name, employee number, state name, state number, those kinds of things, where one's alphabetic, one's numeric, and obviously they're very different. Because you may want to process only a single partition of the secondary index, the DFS HALDBD card works the same way. Only, in fact, that when we process that and you have a processing sequence in your PSP that you're using, then we will process the one partition of the secondary index, though you could or may process all of the data in the main HALDB. Right? So if you say, let's say you have a secondary index of, if say it's an employee database, and you have a secondary index based upon department number. Well, you could process all the people for a certain department or division because that's part of, you know, a secondary index into that thing, employee database by everybody who works in a certain division. So therefore, you get all the data from that partition. And again, your program wouldn't have to change. Your program would simply, all you have to do is name the partition of the secondary index that you want to process. And then we would then be able to process only that data. So it's again trying to give you the flexibility of processing these partitions independently of each other in order to keep your application available to you. So that's sort of what I wanted to say about high availability. Now I want to talk about large databases. And here, of course, we're removing some size restrictions. And here is what most people have thought so far as to why they wanted to move to HALDB, because they were reaching the limit. Right now, in a non-LDB environment, each data set is limited to 4 gigabytes of VSAN or 8 gigabytes of OSAN, depending upon which access method you choose. Of course, you always still have the ability to have data set groups, and many customers have had to use data set groups simply because the databases are getting bigger than they needed to be, than they could be handled in the 4 and the 8 gig. So, you have up to 10 data set groups. Therefore, in a full function non-LDB, you virtually had 40 gigabytes for VSAM or 80 gigabytes of space in OSAM. And I know many customers have been reaching those limits. The problem with second data set groups is that you could only put data from certain segment types into each data set. And if any one of those segment types exceeds the 4 or 8 gigabyte limit, you have reached the end of your database. So even though you may not have an entire 40 gigabytes of data, you may run out of space long before you reach that if you have a single segment type which is going to exceed 4 gigabytes if you're using VSAM. So, HALDB, we changed that limit. Now we allow you to have, we still have a 4 gigabyte limit per data set. Now that also is whether you use VSAM or OSAM now. Even the OSAM data sets are limited to 4 gigabytes. We've removed the ability to use 8 gig for OSAM, but we've given you 1,001 partitions to put it in. So we really have given you, without data set groups, 4,004 gigabytes of data. Now, I get asked a lot if I have used data set groups in my full function database, non-HALDB database, should I use data set groups or should I remove them for the HALDB? And the question is, that depends. If the data set groups were being used simply to give you enough room in your data sets so that you had to create data set groups because you were reaching the limits of VSAM or OSAM, then in most cases, when you go to a HALDB, you would choose to remove those data set groups. If, however, you have partitions, there are other reasons to have dataset groups. Some of those are for performance. Sometimes there are segment types that you access very infrequently, or segment types which are very large, and you process a lot, or they have lots of twins on that particular segment type, and they are very large segments, and you want to process them. If you read them, you like to read them all. It might be advantageous to put them in a dataset group in order for performance. But about 80 or 90% of the cases, most people have used data set groups simply to avoid the restrictions of size. And in those cases, when you move to HALDB, I would remove the data set groups and fall back to one data set group but many partitions. So, partitions, large database. But not only have we removed the restriction of size, what does it mean for your application? Well, a lot of applications have had to historically move data out of the database in order to stay in the 4 gigabytes or 8 gigabytes. You could only keep so many months or years worth of data in the database because you just didn't have room in the 4 gigabytes or 8 gigabytes to live with. And you had to create another database and maybe another process to go access this historical data. Well, now the application can probably just leave it sit there. You can have key range data that might exist, like I'm showing you here, by year. You might have, you know, certain years, you know, each year have its own partition, and things like that. Now, granted, you have 1,001 partitions, so you wouldn't want to do that on a daily basis because you'd have 1,001 days of data. You wouldn't want to do that because eventually you're going to run out of 1,001 data sets. But on a yearly basis, you've got 1,001 years. So that's probably an application limit you could live with. You probably would not expect the application to live for 1,000 years. So that's just showing you that. So what we're hoping to do there is we're hoping that you can now maybe retain some historical data in your databases. You don't have to move it off so quickly. I've actually worked with a customer that was building a web-based application for their customer base. And they were 2 years into processing on their web application, and in which case the customers were allowed to order and request stuff, merchandise, and pay for it, invoices, all those invoicing-type processes that had to occur. And the application was 2 years into it, and they have not yet figured out how to they did not yet write the delete process. They were still thinking about, oh, yeah, we should probably... We have about about 4 years before our invoice numbers or order numbers start wrapping on us in terms of cycling around to the same numbers. So they could keep what they reckoned about 3 to 4 years of data. But they were 2 years into it, and they hadn't even started to delete data yet. So they had decided to leave it sit there. And as they needed their limits, and they would just create partitions and let the database grow across partitions until such time as they got what they reckoned was enough numbers, enough stuff in there that they wouldn't need to keep any longer, and then they would go through in a complete process. But they hadn't even written the delete process, you know, as they were getting into it. So that was something you could think about with help with large databases. Now, I'm not sure how your foils are. I wasn't aware that you guys are only going to have PDFs, but on my screen I've now got, I'm on the large database PHIDAM. PHIDAM is a HIDAM databases are always been a problem for us in that the keys for HIDAM, the root keys, are always increasing. But HIDAM is, you typically insert data in a HIDAM database by increasing its key and going up one and keep going. Some applications have always needed to be that way. They were invoice numbers, account payable numbers, where there was audit trails and you had to have account for every number. The boss required you to account for all those numbers. So they were always increasing keys. Well, the nice thing about a HALDB is you can start out with one partition HALDB, and it all fits. And as you move along, as that partition reaches its 4 gigabytes or 4 gigabyte limits, assuming it's a single data set, you simply create a new partition and for the new high key. And now you can have 2 partitions. And you simply put in the key range that you thought was going to break it, or you wanted to break it, and you create the new high key, and you now have 2 data sets. And you keep doing that process, 4. In this case, I showed you 4 of them. All right, you can keep doing that. You keep growing the database and allowing the database to grow at the far end. Right. Here again is the process where I reckon that backup and recovery of the left-end partitions would be less because there's less likely to be activity down there. So this is just a way for you to have ever-increasing keys and to deal with it. The nice thing about HALDBs is that there are no DD cards anywhere. There is no place that you have to define a DFS-MDA member or anything else. When you want to create a partition, you simply have to create the partition, create the registration in DBRC, and every process which knows about it will now know about that partition. And so there's no JCL changes, there's nothing to deal with, other than things like backup recovery, where, of course, you now have a new partition, and of course, you want to back up that partition and recover it, and you may want to reorganize it. So there's a little bit of work there. But from a general application point of view, there's no work to be done. There's no work to be done to the IMS system. It will just know that that partition exists. So that's another thing we're trying to help you with in allowing your PHIDAM database with ever-increasing keys. Well, that's sort of it what I have for the high availability in large databases. And now I'm going to talk about a few things. And these are just some things that I've come across as I've dealt with customers over the last couple of years, and things that I've had to deal with as a DBA myself, on how, by making some slight changes to databases, can I exploit the HALDB function. So, these are just some ideas and things to think about as we look at applications that are now can be designed around the HALDB structure. One of the problems with HALDBs and taking a partition offline for HALDB is that many databases are not standalone database. They have a secondary index, often coming in by a vastly different key. So obviously when you have when you come in, if you take a particular partition offline, you may affect data in those secondary indexes. So you may tend to get application events and transaction events because you're trying to remove partitions in the main HALDB, but the partitions in the secondary indexes, you know, still want to reference those data. So if you're processing down for data through that way, you don't get quite the independence you thought you might have. An example I'm going to show you on this next slide is a slight change I made to an existing application. It was a state database that had states and cities as its main two main functions, and of course we had a city name as well as its number as its axis. So people could type in this name like Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, and find the state and find the data directly. Now, the application process, by a very slight change we made to it, by putting the state ID in front of that, most people knew that New York was in New York, and so that it was no problem for the application to have one more field the operator typed in was New York, New York, or Illinois, Chicago, or California, Los Angeles, or L.A., you know, those kind of things. Put the two-character state ID in front of the city name into the second Unix database. And therefore, what happened is we went from having an application that looked like a spaghetti bowl from the secondary indexes to the primary indexes. It then became straight down so that you could remove those partitions from the secondary Unix databases as well. And once you remove those partitions, you made the entire California processing disappear from your system for the short time you need to have it offline. Now, again, it did take an application change. It did take some code changes to the application to make that to work. But it wasn't a difficult change because most, you know, in terms of user interface, the state code was obvious to what city, what state that city was in. If the process was not known, that there were some cities that were in multiple states and had to know which one you wanted. But there were some changes you had to make to the application to make that work. But it did work in this case, and it did give you some more independence in terms of application processing. Self-deleting partitions, the next slide. One of the processes we've had to have, of course, is that as data grew old and as you reached your 4 to 8 gigabyte limit, you had to have some process that came along and deleted the old data. Maybe it was last month, and I know that I worked on a lot of payroll, sorry, a lot of invoicing and payroll payment systems, so that we would have a monthly process every month to take off the oldest month off the database so that we could put the new month in because we could only store so many months in the database in terms of size. So, of course, we had to have a process that once a month, the database offline, typically in a batch environment, and ran for a couple of hours and deleted that bit of the data and then put the database back online. Of course, these days you could run as a BMP, but it was a very heavy running BMP in terms of updates. Well, if you have ever-increasing keys and partitions, the keys always move your data to the right end of the partitioning, so the databases, you look to the right of the databases, you always tend to add data at the end of the database. Well, to delete the old partition, you simply have to issue a DBRC command to delete the partition, and then it disappears. Now, again, once you delete a partition, you can't get it back. So once if you define a 10 partition HALDB and you delete one of those partitions, then you can still add the 11th and 12th and 13th and keep 10 partitions. But eventually you're going to run out because eventually once you've deleted partition 1, you can't reuse partition 1. So you have a limit to 1,001 partitions for the life of the HALDB. So again, you wouldn't want to do that on a daily basis. But again, for a year, if you can keep a year in a partition, 1,001 years is a lot of years. 1,001 months may not be okay. Maybe okay, maybe not, depending upon how long you think your application is going to live. But it will be some difficulty if you use up all of the partition IDs by deleting partitions. And eventually you need to have more than you're allowed to have, because you cannot have more than 1,001 partitions. And once you've deleted a partition, you can't get it back. So that's just an idea, but it certainly saves the delete process. It saves the logging of all the updates. That database simply, that partition simply disappeared, and it was gone. Right? It disappeared, and you didn't have to do anything to it to make it go. Again, we've talked about this, and this is where I'm going to finish today, probably, talking about time-dependent data. I know a lot of people that have applications and data that they keep in, and they want to keep the current activity, or they want to have today's active stuff, and then tomorrow they want to deal with it. They want to insert into the partition, and insert rapidly and fast to it, but don't have to read it very often. They're going to read it tomorrow in an offline process. They're holding activity. Only if they're holding data for a length of time, or some other process is going to take it off. Well, you can have time-dependent activity. You could work out with a partition selection which day of the week this date is, and put it in the appropriate day. So on Tuesday, you'd have Tuesday's database available, or Wednesday, you'd have Wednesday's partition available. And you could be doing other processing on those other partitions on the days when they're not being used. So you could do your cleanup, you could do your backups, recoveries, reorgs, in an offline type of environment. So I know that some banks have been looking at things like doing that for some of the activities, so that because and rotate through those partitions each day, and each day one of those partitions will be the active one, and then when it's not the active partition, they clean it up, they can delete the data, they can manipulate it, they can offload it, whatever they want to do with it, and make it ready again, so the next time it cycles around, that partition is empty, ready to go again, and they wouldn't have to delete partitions, they're simply leaving them there as a Tuesday's data. It's just Tuesday. It's not a particular Tuesday, but it's just Tuesday's data. And that's another way you can begin to think about applications in terms of data. And again, data if you're using a partition selection exit, the data has to be based on the root key value. But from that value, if you can derive anything else, if there's any kind of date in the key, then you could certainly do that kind of time-dependent data. Sorry, there's a spelling mistake on the end of that slide there. It should be just saves. And I was just trying to show you there that it's just the roots. You insert, database records get inserted segments get inserted as database records under the root key. The root key is the only value you can select on in terms of a partition selection exit. You can't use any other part of the data because the only thing that we pass to the calls key of the root segment in order to do partition selection. But if if that key of the root segment has enough information in it to determine this kind of information, well, then you could use it to make time-dependent data choices. And I know that like transaction dates is often in a key of that kind of a database. So the root key often contains a date, and that can be used significantly. Well, that's all about end of the presentation. I guess I'm now ready for questions. If anybody has any particular questions or comments, I would be happy to answer anything. Hope I can answer them.
Thank you. Today's question and answer session will be conducted electronically. To ask a question, please press *1 on your touch-tone telephone at this time. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is *1 if you do have a question. We have a question from Ralph Knobber at Cigna.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Thanks for the presentation. It was very informative. I have a bunch of questions. Do we have enough time for all the questions that I have?
What time is it? I get it. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Some of the questions that are current non-HALDB processing concerns, I think, that are global to a lot of people. And I was curious, is there any new techniques in HALDB to alleviate some of these problems? I think some of these you might have Some of your presentation triggered some of my questions, and I think some of them might have been answered. The first question I had was about creeping keys. How far can you go before splitting the hair becomes too thin? Won't there come a time when the whole database will have to be unloaded and reloaded? In other words, for a certain partition that may fill up very quickly, outside of a partition selection exit routine.
High DAM databases eventually depend. I mean, if you have an 8-byte key and it's numeric, well, of course, you just put it into 50 partitions. You can always live. I mean, if the key can ever get bigger than 8 bytes, then you could always cater for it. Now, the problem is going to be the highest activity is always going to be in the end partition. If your keys are always increasing,
yes,
that is a known problem with a high DAM database. So, yes, there is some, and no, HaldB doesn't always address all of that. It addresses some of it, but not all of it, no. If you always are looking for the next available key, that is going to be a continual process. That's an application issue, and there's nothing we can do about that. That's simply the nature of the key.
Okay, and in tandem with that would also be the index, too, because BSAM doesn't reclaim space on deletes.
Right?
You
can have CI reclaim on, but yeah, the KFDS is, yeah.
If we're going to delete a lot of roots, then the index is going to be pointing, it's going to kill that space, and BSAM won't reclaim it, so.
Yeah, OLR helps. Again, an OLR process allows you to reorganize while it's available. So that will fix up the KFDSs.
Okay, I'm getting to that one too. Okay, the next one I have is: does HaldB? Is there any techniques that we can address twin chain problems outside of dataset grouping?
I don't quite understand the question.
We have some databases with some really long twin chains, and going from current partitioning techniques with dataset grouping to HaldB non-dataset grouping puts the whole record in a block versus segments in a block.
It actually
increases our IIO and increases the runtime of our transactions in general.
I wouldn't do that. You're right. I would suspect that if you've done it for that reason, then you're better off putting those records together. They process much quicker together. You can. The nice thing about the partition, the dataset can be different CI sizes.
Yes.
You can have the A dataset at 4K, and the one segment type can be in 10, be an 8K part, CI size.
So instead of the data set groups can have different
CI sizes. So then you can put large records together, let them process together. If you've got a process that'll help, then the data set group is still a good way to go.
Right. That's the testing we did.
Still perform better in the data set group.
Exactly. That's the testing we did in lieu of fixing it with a application change.
Yeah. That certainly is a good way to go.
Okay, my next question is, we have compression. Does IBM recommend removing the compression or keeping it? And which is better, hardware versus software? Keep it? Okay.
Hardware for compression, compression is always a good idea. I mean, HaldB doesn't change that. I mean, it removes your need to compress things because you have more room.
Yeah.
But these days, the compression routines are nearly quick enough that you won't notice and you'll save enough on I.O. anyway. Compression routines are probably a good idea.
I realize I kind of veered off of the HaldB theme, but it crossed my mind if hardware was better than software with HaldB anyway. So you're saying hardware's better than software compression for at least any
typically
kind of
is, yeah. I'm from what I know, it is, yeah.
Okay, my next question is, how many bytes does the HaldB adds prefix bytes, right, to each segment? What's the percentage on a typical database of increase in space with HaldB?
Depends on how many logical pointers you have. If you have no logical databases, no logical pointers, then you add 8 bytes to the prefix.
Okay.
All right. If you have logic, you go from a 4-byte pointer for a logical pointer to you add a fair bit of data per pointer. So, but if it's no logicals, then you're not much. Secondary indexes go up by quite a bit. Secondary indexes can go up by about a third or a half.
Right.
Or even double.
Okay.
A secondary index database, because those are EPS pointers, the secondary index databases can grow significantly different. They can go from a 40-byte record to a 90-byte record.
For
the secondary indexes.
Yeah, okay.
But they're typically smaller anyway. Secondary index database tends to be relatively small. You know, you're looking at a 90-byte record. okay. You know, 40 bytes to 90 bytes. You're thinking 50 bytes. Yeah. Second
right,
instances are where you're going to see the
okay.
increase in space, not
that's,
in the...
That's a fair answer, thanks. I have a couple more questions. You triggered me when you talked about partition independence. Do you folks have any plans or thinking about any automated tools that tells us which part's more active than others? Because you talked about intervals for backups for quiet partitions versus active partitions.
It's something
we have manual processes, but it's too cumbersome and time-consuming. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Are we looking at anything? Not
yeah, I mean, outside of SMF, looking at I.O. and all that good stuff, you know? Looking at...
Pointer checker is a good tool. Pointer checker does allow you to look at the active, look at the thing. Are we looking at it? I'm not sure. I wouldn't hear it necessarily either, so I don't know.
Yeah,
nothing that I can, you know.
Yeah, being a DBA, I would say to myself I'd be micromanaging if trying to look at what partition is more active than others. It's a great idea,
yes.
but being very pragmatic about it, how do you achieve that? So,
yeah,
it's an idea.
I wrote myself some stuff that did things like looking at how many split segments there are.
Okay.
You know, the counts to look at for in replace activity, it's split segments.
Okay.
In insert activity, simply insert counts. So looking at insert counts of segment types, looking at the numbers of segments from one iteration to another, using the history databases of pointer checker, without doing anything, pointer checker allows you to do a trend analysis, right? So if you keep the history database from pointer checker and you run it on a weekly or monthly basis, you'll know how many segments you're increasing by. And then the only other thing you need to worry about is split segments. So if you're doing compression... looking at split segments and putting those back together again. So it's not that hard to come up with something. You know, with pointer checker, you get 90% of it by not having to do anything.
That's a good answer.
Run the historical analysis.
That's a good answer. It's a perfect segue into my next question. pointer checker becomes problematic when you're running against an online active database. It will abend because of changing data. Is there anything done in that arena? Is there anything done in that arena to solidify it?
I used to run it. Now, you run pointer checker for two reasons. One, you run pointer checker to check pointers. There you can't do it against an active database, right? But yes. to collect data, you can run it against the active database. It rarely fails.
Okay.
I've never seen it fail.
We
used to run it weekly against the active databases. But you don't run it, of course, at your peak time, but run it during your batch. You're running during a less peak time.
Yes.
But to collect historical data, you should be able to run it any time.
Yeah. Pointer
checking. It shouldn't fail.
So hash checking, full checking will fail. Hash checking sometimes makes it through.
Yeah, but okay. If I was collecting data for the history file in order to collect statistics, I don't care if I get pointer errors. I ignore pointer errors.
Okay.
I'm simply collecting the data. If you want to actually count the pointers, then you have to do it a concurrent copy. You have to do it a good copy. And you want to do it because you want to make sure that if you have one image copy off-site, you better make sure that the image copy off-site is the good one.
Yes.
Right? It makes no sense taking an image copy off-site if it's not any good.
Right.
And if it's not a batch image copy in some form, then you're going to be in trouble. Now, with flash copy in version 10, you can run against a flash copy.
I saw that blur. Yeah. And that's a hard... That's
but
a
you're
hard
right. There,
that's a hardened image. That's a batch image copy. In DBRC, that's
yeah.
Is that the type of output?
Yeah, it's
for flash copy.
It
is a BIC in DBRC, not a concurrent image copy. It's a static copy, right?
It's a new image copy type.
Yes. Oh, brand new.
New Recon Records. There's a new image copy type now. I'm a DBA. I still believe in having at least one. I know that we're getting pushed to have the database open all the time, but there is still a need to have at least some point where we get the database offline for some kind of a process, in particular to have a good image copy, to have a good backup site.
Okay.
So, yeah, you still will struggle with that. But HALDB helps you in that in some regards. In some regards, it's not.
What does the record look
yeah,
like?
Yeah, you still struggle with that.
You know what the record looks like, the new type?
I do, but I just attended the class a few weeks ago. But I couldn't tell you off the difference off my head. But yeah, there is a different record type.
Okay, let me ask you a couple more questions, and I'll be done here. My next question was, what tools to tell us if we need to reroute databases online? We just talked about that. That's Pointer Checker.
Pointer Checker is the best thing to do.
Yeah, or online
or
anything there else, yeah. That too, right?
And use the historical function. Use the historical function to see what's active.
Okay. I'll make a note of that. Next question, does the DFS how DBDD statement have to be in order, key part, that you told us about? When you want a partition selected?
It gives you the starting partition and a number, how many sequential partitions.
Oh,
at this point, it was sequential.
You don't have to really put in the part name?
Put the part name in, plus comma number of partitions.
Oh, okay. So it's not real. Is it a sysin? Is that what it is?
It's a sysin.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a data,
now,
a data set name.
There was the requirement at one point to give us a list of partitions by name. And I'm not sure if that ever got in or not.
That sounds like a good idea.
Never heard of that thing being there or not.
Yeah, we're going to try to make our names mean something with our partitions. You can get lost in numbers, that's for sure, especially when things...
I've just done that with some customers. Making meaningful partition names is very hard. Don't forget, a partition name is unique within the recon, not within the DELL-DB.
I agree.
We spent 2 days of a 10-day process, and the first 2 days we came up with partition names. We were trying to figure out how to do partition names. Because you have to do partition names for the primary databases, the secondary NICs, and all those other names, and coming with a good scheme is a long and involved process. So, yeah. Good luck.
I just have a couple more little questions.
Yep.
I know this might sound crazy, but, and there might be limitations here, is there a possibility of a product that will allow us to move data around in between partitions? If we see a partition filling up, kind of like a defrag type thing, except for... Of course, due to size limitations, we, you know, might not be able to keep the database.
You can
online.
Repartition anytime you like. I mean, repartitioning is the best process. You can do that very easy by repartition. Unload, change the partition keys, reload.
Unfortunately, that might be in the middle of a day on a Wednesday, and that's not good.
Yeah. Right. Okay. That's a known requirement. We have a known requirement for it.
Okay. I mean, I realize high key drives everything, so how in the world could we achieve this, offloading data with a key that doesn't fit in a different part?
We've heard that requirement before.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like a really, really good relief valve to me. Next question, do you recommend a general buffer pool for all the DDs or subpools for each DD or...
LDB doesn't change how you access it much. It depends. I mean, again, if you have ever-ascending keys, if you have certain partitions that are very, very active, yes, I would probably go with putting those things in storage. Again, KSDSs should get 80 or 90% hit rates in your buffer pools.
Okay.
Including your ILDSs. If you have ILDSs if you're using OLR and things, ILDSs need to be in those buffer pools.
Yeah. We did find that certain general subpools were better than individual DDs because of collectively gathering data, especially with that twin chain problem.
Yeah.
Let me see. The migration aid tool, the DLI tool, I'm sorry, the migration aid tool when you want to repart and whatnot, does that present the data in character format? Do you know?
The migration aid utility that we provide as part of the product is only for a full function to HALDB conversion. The conversion aid utility, which is a tool,
that's one of
does it by key, and yeah, I think it does a very good job of that. I don't know it myself offhand, but I've heard it does a good job, and it's easy to use, and it gives you what you need in terms of how to figure out it out. So, yeah, I would think so. But I don't have any experience myself. I'm sorry.
Okay. The very last question I have here is I'm starting to read up on the partition selection exit routines, but it looks like it's going to require some expertise in assembler, of course, and whatnot. Is there resource for understanding that and maintaining that offering?
Are you asking if IBM provides service offerings for that? Yes, of course we do.
Okay.
Don Stryker would be happy to talk to anybody who needs some help with those kind of things. The exit we provide a sample exit, which isn't difficult. So I don't think it's extremely difficult to write. Anybody who knows any assembler should be able to do it.
Okay.
It's not a difficult routine.
That was just a general question. And that's
we would probably, right. For services, I would imagine we would provide a way of I don't know, I would assume that they'd be willing to to, we have service people to go out and do these kinds of things. So, but you do have to pay for it.
Okay.
Well, we wouldn't, you know, support, you know, we don't support, we can't support it long term without some kind of a contract.
You know, I just, you just generated another question here from Ray, if you don't mind. We do SMS polling, and the shadowing online reorg process is pretty much predicated on how much DASDI resource we have. I mean, obviously, we can't do it all at once. Is that the way to go, is to have, like, an esoteric pool name or an SMS dummy pool to do the online reorgs? I mean, this probably is a general concern for everybody. How can you do everything at once? You really can't, right? I guess you have to stagger stuff.
Storage management is an interesting thing. I would probably put the A and the M data in the same pool. I mean, the data sets live in the same SMS pool. You have a big enough pool.
Yeah, actually, I mean, what we've done is we've split pools. We've taken really small databases that would chop up, you know, large chunks of free space and put that in its own pool, and then put really big database data sets in a different pool that get bigger chunks on one extent. And I'm not sure if you want to even discuss about that.
Although that stuff gets uniquely, you have to look at your processes and how it works and what you guys do, how you allocate, you know, the rules of storage management classes.
And everything has changed since RAID came along anyway, with extend processing and CI and CA split. They aren't the same anymore, so everything's changed. So
this is not the forum for it,
I know, but being a database person, it comes into play.
Yep.
You know, that's all I have. I think I took enough floor time here.
Thank you. All right.
We'll go next.
Does anyone else
have... We do have another question from Tony Impellitteri at AT&T.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Rick. I think I've worked with you before. My name is Tony Impellitteri, and I'm a lead DBA for AT&T. And I just wanted to comment more than a question. Especially for the person who was just talking, or anyone else on the call who's thinking about migrating to HALDB, we had to go to it in our company when we were then SBC about 4 years ago, when HALDB was brand spanking new, and believe in IMS 7.1. And we had a situation where our carrier access billing databases had to load tons of legally mandated data. We had to do this. We had 4 months to do it in. We could not use full function. We could not migrate to FastPath, which we also use for our customer information system, because there are code set and coding differences in FastPath as opposed to full function. We didn't really have the time to rewrite the application portfolio. So we did it in 4 months. And I want to comment first and foremost about the commitment that IBM makes to HALDB. We encountered an extremely serious error. In a flaw in the IMS HALDB code with regard to OSAM sequential buffering, and it would have killed our project altogether, except that the labs actually got it resolved for us 100% in 2 weeks, maybe a little less. So first of all, you can be assured of IBM's commitment if you do go to HALDB. Basically, I wanted to tell you or other people what we learned from our project, and basically I'll just lay out the points. Number one, have extremely well thought out, very solid technical and business requirement documents. In other words, technical, how you are going to intend to partition, etc., how you're going to lay out your partitions, what you're going to name them, anything and everything you can think of. Have extremely detailed and well thought out technical and business requirements. Number two, have standards, like for naming your objects, etc., and follow them. Number three, test rigorously. That's quite important. Test rigorously. Apply the maintenance and the fixes that you should that are out there. And very important, understand how the utilities work. That's critical. And I think Rick touched on that a little bit in his presentation. Basically, with repartitioning, relaying out partitionings, load balancing, that kind of thing, you have to really understand what the utilities can do for you. And, of course, they have progressed in their flexibility, features, power, et cetera, over the 4 years since we implemented HALDB. The greatest thing on anyone's side when you go to HALDB is to realize that it is full function. Everything is exactly the same as it was in the world that you migrated from. That was the thing that was so critical for us in our project, because we didn't have time to change anything. Now, to the gentleman who was first speaking, basically I think they talked about long twin chains in the database. Basically, the way that we dealt with that, if we had to deal with it, is to break up the keys. In other words, if you have a 10 or 12 byte key on an extremely long twin chain, you may be able to break up segments into a one segment over another segment based on subsets of the keys, and you just kind of layer it that way and cut down the size of your twin chains. For space allocation, what we found in our five production environments, we had a ratio of anywhere of increased space from anywhere from 1.6 times the amount of DASD in the old database to as much as 3.2 times the DASD in the old database. But my thought, it's a trade-off that's extremely worth making, extremely worthwhile. Of course, that's for PS indexes, ILDS data sets, for self-healing pointers, etc. But it's well worth indulging in the extra DASD. You get more than you bargain for when you do that. And finally, if you want to pick up the speed of your PHIDAM OSAM processing, if you'd implement your databases with OSAM, I highly recommend sequential buffering and then tweaking your buffer pools as necessary. But we did have a successful project. We did it in 4 months, and we've never looked back. We've never had a space problem with it. We've never had processing anomalies with it. The utilities excuse me, have continued to advance, and it's a very, very well thought out database, and of course has IBM's commitment because it is full function, and that of course is the flagship. Other than that, I think there was one other point that was raised about reloading or rebalancing partitions. In the beginning, we didn't have the migration aid to really assist us in that. So when partitions would develop hotspots by loading extremely large accounts, for example, in a partition, and there were partition that had five or six of those with millions upon millions of segments, I wrote my own program and control card driven utility to run through the database and analyze it and right down to the byte level, lay out so many bytes per partition based on whole database record sizes. And that worked very well for us. But I believe that IBM now has a product offering that will do that, unless I'm mistaken in that rate. But we started out with our own utility that I wrote. And I don't know whether IBM has one now. I've been out of the loop a little bit with regard to HALDB. But my thought is that if you have good requirements and you think it out well, there's absolutely no danger in going to HALDB for your very largest databases. I think you'd be real pleased with it. And that's my comments. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you. Just a general comment for everyone. We certainly do, in terms of speed and performance, that OSAM will always run rings around VSAM, in terms of especially the large twin chains to process. So OSAM is certainly the way to go with central buffering.
And at this time, we have no further questions.
Okay, Rick, thank you very, very much for your time today. We certainly appreciate it, and we appreciate all of our customers joining us. Just a quick note that 2 weeks from today, on February 27th, we will be having another teleconference that's going to focus on the IMS HALDB conversion and maintenance aid. So you can learn about how it will assist with your conversion and also how it will assist with the post-conversion maintenance as well. We're also going to talk about the IMS Online Reorg facility and how we can reorganize your HALDB database in seconds in one step. So thank you again very much for your time, and we look forward to talking with you again soon.
And that does conclude today's conference. Again, thank you for your participation.